I'm John Kroll. Today's No Limits is not for the calorie counters. One of the many things that makes the holiday season special is the food. Today we're going to talk about holiday cooking, about how to make all those great meals and treats that we crave during this special season. My guests are Chef Neil Brown and Jolene Ketzenberger of Eat Drink Indy. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about holiday cooking, about memories, food tips, all sorts of things associated with making the savory meals and treats that we all associate with this time of the year. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Chef Neil Brown of Pizzaology and other restaurants over the years, and Jolene Ketzenberger of Eat Drink Indy, WFYI Radio, and her own blog. Welcome back to both of you. You're veterans of the program.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
This is actually kind of an annual tradition now, I think. So let's just start talking a little bit about what meals the two of you plan, because obviously you make both of you make very conscious choices about the food that you prepare and that you consume. I'll start with Neil, but what's going to be the Christmas meal at the Brown House?
Man, I knew you were going to ask this. So my wife and I decided today we are doing tacos.
Tacos, all right. So
incredibly non-traditional, right? But we're going to roast chickens. We're going to do some carnitas. We've got several vegetarians in our family, so we'll probably do some nopales. And we're going to – yeah, it's kind of nice, though, because – There is a rhyme to the reason, or a reason to the rhyme, I should say. You want something that you can sort of pick at all day, right? And tacos are actually a really good option for that, where you can sort of warm something up, and you can kind of have it around all day. It just makes for a less stressful day to have all of that ready to go, and it's actually really nice to do something a little non-traditional.
Well, and the kids probably love it, too.
They do. They love it.
They don't have to sit still and wait.
Exactly.
For a lot.
Yeah, it's interactive, and so they can, you know, when they're hungry, they can go grab a taco. When they're not hungry, you know, they can be doing whatever they are going to do all day. So, yeah, it'll be fun, I think.
All right, Jolene, what's going to be at the Ketzenberger?
She's going to want that meal like crazy.
No way. I think because you know the kids get up and we do the presents and everything, and then everybody wants to eat, but you know they don't want to wait around for the big dinner. We're probably going to do biscuits and gravy, honestly, on Christmas morning, and then you know if we really plan ahead and everything, we might have a ham later on that day, but I don't think it's going to be like a big dinner or anything. Probably more like just sliced for sandwiches or something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to stay with you, Jolene.
For
the folks who are out there who are, you know, freaking out because we were talking before we went on the air about how while it is a wonderful time of the year, it also can be a very stressful time of the year because people are traveling back and forth, doing all sorts of things. So let's say you're hosting and you've got family coming in for the holidays.
All right. And
you want a meal that is going to be memorable, but also relatively easy to execute.
Right.
What are your top choices there?
Well, you have to do all the prep ahead, so it has to be something that you just pop in the oven. You know, that way you can have it all done, and people come in, and then you know that you can be happy, and you're going to be standing around the kitchen drinking wine while you're tossing a salad or something. But have something that can go in the oven. Honestly, our family in the past has done things like a big pan of lasagna, something that you can have all ready to go. You can even have made it the day before and just take it out of the refrigerator and pop it in the oven. Something like that, I think, is really good for a big get-together. And it's kind of festive. It's not something you make very often. At least I don't.
Okay, Neil.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with Jolene. I mean, there's a reason why you see so many casseroles on the holidays, right? It does need to be something that is simple to go in the oven. And the oven is sort of the workhorse of the kitchen on the holidays because, you know, everything needs to be able to be made ahead and then it can go in the oven to finish off. Now, again, if you like that traditional Christmas sort of meal, I love a really nice sort of roast, right? A prime rib, of course, is really nice.
Absolutely.
That's a, you know, that's just a, it's kind of a crowd pleaser. You can do it over several hours. So as Jolene said, hang out in the kitchen while it cooks and have a glass or four of wine, and, you know, and try to avoid talking politics.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And so, but, you know, I love sort of the elegance of a classic beef roast. And of course, my family was always a big fan of beef tenderloins. Mm-hmm. And so we cooked a lot of beef tenderloins over the years back when Atlas was business.
Oh, right. Sure. Everybody stood in line to get their beef tenderloins
at
right. Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'd stand in line, get your tenderloin, and then we'd roast it. And so, yeah, roasts like that, to me, sort of harken back to those sort of nostalgic Christmas meals, yeah.
Well, and how about treats? I mean, because that's the other part of this is we associate it with, we were all talking also before we went on the air about
well, of course,
desserts,
right?
Cakes, sweets, all of that sort of stuff, and that is something we associate with Christmas.
Well, you have to have the cookies, of course, you know, and so I don't think my kids are happy until we've made the gingerbread men, you know, because I like gingerbread, and I'll sit there and decorate them all if they get tired of it, which they probably do. Although sometimes our gingerbread men turn into, well, one year they were gingerbread ninjas, and they were like, you know, axing each other in the heads and stuff like that. I have boys, you know, so sometimes our gingerbread men don't look like traditional gingerbread men, but we make them, you know, so that's the thing. So we like to have the gingerbread men, but then we also make those. Yeah, you know, silly little cookies that don't really take much. You know, you make them with cornflakes and marshmallows and green food coloring, and they kind of sort of look like little wreaths or holly leaves or something like that. And honestly, you know, put a couple little Red Hots on there. Those things disappear. You know, you make them and people eat them, and they're silly, and they're just nothing to make. But you know, they're tasty, and no, you know, my kids really aren't going for complicated stuff at Christmas.
Yeah. For whatever reason, I when I think back, I think about fudge. Mm-hmm. My family liked to make fudge, and as rich as it is, I'm not sure it's a cookie. It's definitely not a brownie, but fudge seemed to be on the table a lot. My wife happens to be an excellent baker, and so chocolate chip cookies. She said to me this morning, mm-hmm. "That's not a holiday cookie," and I was like, "No, it's an everyday cookie, and holidays fall on a day, right?" So, like chocolate chip cookies are great.
Subtext is here. That's don't right. deny me my chocolate
That's
chip
right.
cookies.
Yeah, please, right? So chocolate chip cookies are great. Yeah, you know, I tend to gravitate towards pies because I think pies, again.
I love pies.
Yeah. I'm a pie guy, not a cake guy. But you know, you've got all this preserved fruit, hopefully, left over from summer. And persimmons are certainly a pie that sees time on our Christmas table. When my family is around, my sister's an excellent cook. And so she always will do a persimmon or pumpkin pie.
Yes, see, I do. I have persimmon pulp in the freezer right now, and I have one kid who's clamoring for persimmon pudding, but he's, I think, the only one of the three that really likes it. Because, of course, it isn't pudding at all. It's like this wet, moist, cakey kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's brownish, sort of red. You know, and so it's not like the most appealing looking thing, but, you know, he's a very sentimental kind of guy, and so he's always, you know, thinks that says Christmas. So yes, I'll make persimmon pudding.
Yeah, and fresh whipped cream, right?
Yeah. You know, in the past, it might have been Cool Whip when the kids were little on top of their pumpkin
or still,
pie. But
or still.
Occasionally.
Maybe there's Cool Whip. But yeah, I it would be much better with some fresh whipped cream.
Yeah, yep.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about holiday cooking here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. So let's ramp up the degree of difficulty a little bit.
Okay.
Now that we've dealt with
we
ones
the
that
easy
are fairly
questions.
well, and also basically the questions were easy about what you could prepare. If you want to be a little more adventurous, or you want to do something, you know, it's a special occasion, a special holiday, maybe the death of a first one following the death of a grandparent, or the first one following the birth of a grandchild, or something like that, that signifies you really want to make this a truly memorable Christmas for everyone who is involved, a truly memorable holiday season. What are some ideas that you could think of that are a little bit outside the lines, or that would make it really remarkable? Neil, I'm going to start with you on that one.
Yeah, well, I think everyone that is sort of starting to really engage in cooking and sort of trying to up their game in cooking is talking about sous vide, right, at home. I think people are starting to sort of see sous vide as being demystified a little bit, and that it's not magic that we're working with. By the way, sous vide, if you're not familiar with it, is cooking something at a very constant and low temperature in a water bath with some sort of a barrier between the food and the water, right? So in this case, it would be, to answer your question, so let's use a prime rib, right? So you take this prime rib and you could either vacuum seal it, or you could stick it in a very large, they make 2 gallon Ziploc bags, and you could submerge that in a water bath. You'd want to season it up really, really well. You could lay that in a water bath at about 130, boy, I'm going to hope I get this right, but about 138 degrees or so. And that would actually be in that water bath for up to, I'm going to say, 6.5 to 7 hours. And it gives it this really amazing sort of incredible interior. Then you could pull it out and you would sear it in a pan or in the oven even at a very, very high temperature. What it does is it provides you very even cooking throughout the roast. And I can assure you, if you go online and you do the research on this, you will have the most impressive piece of meat you've ever presented at the Christmas table, because it's as complicated as it sounds, it's really foolproof, quite frankly. And it can be a very beautiful presentation.
How do you maintain the water temperature, if I might?
There are a couple ways, right? I think a lot of people would say you use what's called an immersion circulator. These days, Nova makes one. I have an Innova. I have a Polyscience, and I also have a Joule at home. They're all great, but you can just use a pot, right? And a thermometer, candy thermometer, works really well. There is some technical difficulty here, right? But you said let's step up the.
No, that's what I was asking for. Is I wanted something that was going to be
It
was going to be a little harder to execute.
Yeah.
It sounds like if you have the technology, it's I'm sounding like the $6 million man
right.
here.
We have the technology.
If you have the technology, it isn't super difficult to execute.
No.
If you have to improvise, it will require constant attention because you got to keep adjusting the temperature of the water.
I wouldn't say constant, because you'd be surprised at just how much precision you can actually get with water. If you put it on a very, very low flame and maybe offset the pan, you can achieve precise cooking temperatures. And with the thermometer, there's no reason why you can't monitor it whenever you need to, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jolene.
I was going to suggest doing a type of ethnic cuisine, maybe that's something out of your regular repertoire. I was happy to, I was opening my cookie books actually, because I went to a cookie exchange the other day. And so I was looking through my cookie recipes and I opened a cookie book and there was my favorite pad thai recipe that I hadn't seen in a long time. Clearly I had not made it since I'd opened this cookie book some years ago. But then I thought, well, now wouldn't that be fun, you know, is to pick a particular ethnicity that you might like and do a dinner like that. It would be very different, a little challenging, different flavors than you ordinarily probably cook. So I was thinking something like that would be fun.
I love that, especially like a Moroccan tagine.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Because you've got those sort of those spices, right? That
right.
You sort of associate
those
with the
warm
holidays.
Spices, right? The clove, the anise, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about holiday cooking, all of the food, the treats, the meals that help make the holiday season special. We are talking with two veterans of No Limits and two veterans of actually holiday cooking shows, Chef Neil Brown of Pizzaology and other restaurants, and Jolene Ketzenberger of Eat Drink Indie, WFYR Radio, and her own blog. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about holiday cooking today on No Limits, about memories, food tips, all of the things that help make the holiday season special. My guests are Chef Neil Brown of Pizzaology and Jolene Ketzenberger of Eat Drink Indie, here at WFYI. And she has her own blog as well. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener did and find us on Facebook. You can find us at No Limits WFYI. And this listener writes, what tips can the panel provide as far as timing a big holiday meal? Personally, I get overwhelmed when I have five or six dishes that all need to be cooked for differing lengths of time, but all need to be hot and ready around the same time.
Oh, that's a problem.
Yeah. I'll throw it to Neil first. Give Jolene a moment to collect her thoughts here.
Okay,
yeah.
So a couple things. So always remember that a meat coming out of the oven needs to rest. And so meat, I think whatever, if you're going to do a roast or if you're going to do a ham or something like that, it always needs to rest when it comes out of the oven. And it, frankly, it needs to rest for, I would say, a minute per pound at least, and that is minimum. I would even go as far as to say 4-5 minutes a pound if you can get away with it. So that literally buys you, in some, you know,
creates
in some
a window. Of,
it does.
Yeah.
A good 25-minute window, and it is not going to get cold. It's going to, the thermal temperature of that thing is going to, it's going to keep it warm. So then the next rule I would say is, if you have casseroles that are more dense, those things will stay warm for a good 15, 20 minutes out of the oven. They're not going to get cold. So it's really your vegetables, your roasted vegetables, and things that are going to have more surface area, sort of that touch the air, right? Those things are the, should be the last things that go in the oven and should be the last things that come out.
Absolutely. So Neil's exactly right. So if you have your turkey or your ham, and I would say that ham is very forgiving as far as pulling it out of the oven and then letting it sit, because you know it's not, nothing's going to, you know, it's not going to affect the flavor. It's not really going to dry out or anything. It's like maybe a turkey might if it sat too long. But you know, you got a good 20-30 minutes there to then put the sweet potatoes in the oven or to. And I would say to reheat some of the things that you had prepared earlier. You know, the mash. Nothing's wrong with reheating your mashed potatoes. You know, you're not gonna ruin your mashed potatoes. So some of those things, you know, you can have almost done ahead of time, and then you know, pop them in the oven right at the end. You know, after you've pulled out your turkey or your ham or your roast or whatever, and then at the very last, you can put in. Okay, so like my family, my kids always insist on crescent rolls. You know, and I know, you know, the ones that come in a tube and they like to pop them open on the counter and then they like to roll them up. And so then you can pop those crescent rolls in at the last minute.
We're talking about holiday cooking here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Bill has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Bill, welcome to the program.
Fine. Thank you for having me on.
Certainly. What's
and
on your mind?
I'm such a big fan of Jolene's when she totally changed the taste section in the Indianapolis Star. I paid her the highest compliment. I said on Fridays I'd read the taste section before I read the sports page.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Thank you.
My praise.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Now, my question is, we plan to have lasagna on Christmas Day.
All right.
And when I've had it best, it was with fresh pasta noodles, but they're very difficult to find now. Do you have any suggestions regarding that?
Thanks very much for the call and the question,
yeah,
Bill.
Absolutely. So you can. I think fresh pasta would be a good option. Neil Brown could probably speak to that a little bit better than I could. But yeah, you can find fresh pasta maybe at Nicole Taylor's Pasta and Market at 54th and the Monon in Indianapolis. And there are, I think, a couple of other places here in Bettini Pasta, right, that do pasta. So maybe Neil could talk about using fresh pasta.
Yeah, don't forget that you can make fresh pasta ahead. So if it's a matter of time, you can make that pasta, the sheets, and you can freeze it. And it'll freeze just fine, and then you can make that pasta. Alternatively, you could make your lasagna ahead, too. There would be nothing wrong with making it in advance. But, yeah, what Jolene said about buying fresh pasta, those would be the places to do it. That's Nicole Taylor's and Bettini Pasta, if you Google search those.
Gotten an email from a listener named Lynn, and if you want to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Lynn writes, as part of our family tradition, I make a pot de creme for Christmas Eve dessert with whipped cream.
Nice.
Collecting the cups has become great fun as well, as they are difficult to find with lids intact. First, probably I'll explain in part because I don't know what a pot de creme is, what we're talking about here. Neil?
So pot de creme is, it's a custard.
So I mispronounced it in addition to everything
else.
You let me off the hook here, but yeah, I did.
So pot de creme is, it's a custard in the vein of a creme brulee.
Okay.
And so it's a really elegant yet decadent pudding, right? Good for you, because man, what are you doing for the holidays?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's Neil said, like, think of pudding only denser and richer and more luscious.
Making, right?
Right. So they're just wonderful, but the, you know, special, having special cups for it and everything, that's kind of cool.
That is very cool. Yeah, that's a cool
holiday
tradition.
I'd be just putting it in a ramekin in my house.
Because I'm thinking in this conversation so far, you know, Jolene in particular, you've referenced how there are these certain rituals or traditions associated with food that, well, your children
I think
now
kids do that too,
expect,
you know?
Yeah, well, but that's okay. And you probably had similar things when you were growing up and you went back home. How important is that to the holiday food experience?
I think it's really important. As a matter of fact, it might be even more important than the big fancy dinner or something like that. I always liked, when I was growing up, my mom would make cranberry sauce, and I always liked to, she would always, you know, say, oh, listen to the berries pop, you know, because when you cook them, you know, you're boiling them in your sort of sugar syrup there, and they pop, and they make this really kind of a startlingly loud pop. And I always got a kick out of that. And so then when I made them, I would call my kids in and say, okay, listen to you, hear it, it'll pop. And it does, and it's fun, and it doesn't do anything. I mean, it's just cranberries cooking. But then my daughter this past year, she and her friends at college, she's a sophomore in college, had a Friendsgiving dinner, and she sent me a snap picture of her making her cranberry sauce and said it popped. Listen, you know,
that's cool.
And it's so sweet. So those kinds of things, you know, I think are important. They just connect you over the years. You know, we always have to make Chex Mix, and that's what I was doing last night, actually, was making Chex Mix, because it isn't Christmas unless we were walking through the house, you know, eating handfuls of salty Chex Mix. So things like that.
Neil, what are some of your family holiday food traditions?
Well, so, you know, professional chefs actually use nostalgia as an ingredient. It's something that we try to tap into a lot. In our house, my sister, like I've mentioned a couple times now, is really an excellent cook. So she does the whole chicken and noodles and these amazing yeast rolls, these fantastic mashed potatoes. So when I think of holiday sort of tradition, I really identify with her style of sort of this really great Indiana country food, right? And so when I now it's gotten to the point when I have it outside of my sister's, it just never it just doesn't.
It it's doesn't. Just not the same.
No, it's not the same, and it can't even measure, right? It's just like no one makes noodles like my sister makes noodles. And so, yeah. So, you know, it's these kinds of traditions and that nostalgia that make these this time of year so important. And it's also worth saying that it's writing these recipes down because in our society, we don't have a lot of sort of traditions that we pass down from generation to generation. And the written recipe is still very much identified as a sort of a document, a historical document of families, right?
That's absolutely right. I love that.
Yeah. So in a sort of at a time when we don't tell stories, you know, as much as we used to between in our families because we can tweet that, right? You know, the written recipe is still really
just the same when you tweet it, too.
It's just the same, right? But written recipes really become a powerful sort of historic document of your family.
We've got a Facebook message on point from a listener named Jody. And I should say, if you want to join the conversation, you can do what Jody has done and reach out to us via Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Jody writes, a tradition in French-Canadian families on Christmas Eve is meat pie, and each family has its own recipe. Our family's recipe from Montreal area has ground pork, minced onion, simmered in water with cinnamon, cloves, salt, and pepper, then baked in a pie crust. My meat pie filling just came off the stove and is cooling outside. Putting it in pie crust later today. The memories of Christmas past spent with family are priceless. And Jody, if you want to send your address, I'm sure we'd all be happy.
We would just take the pie.
Keep an eye on the cat.
It sounds great. Yeah.
That sounds wonderful.
It does. It's mince, right?
Yeah.
It's mince pie. It's sort of a very old traditional sort of holiday treat. Yeah. Yeah.
How important, because I won't say, it'll be a point of discussion in my household. My wife grew up on the East Coast, and she's convinced that, you know, the only seasoning that we do here in the Midwest involves salt, that every dish is way too heavily salted for her palate. And, you know, for a lot of Midwesterners, they've come to expect that. Because we are now a more spread out society where we have people coming from different places for the holidays, how do you make the adjustments for what's a good way to make adjustments for people's different tastes and what their expectations of what a holiday meal should be? Because obviously Jody's got, you know, a specific cultural reference here. Neil, I'm going to start with Neil on that one.
Yeah. So, you know, taking those kinds of things into consideration is just another form of hospitality to me. Mm-hmm. And being just mindful about the people that you're serving. You know, if you're going to use spice, don't use too much spice when you know that not everybody is going to. And by spice, I mean sort of like Scoville units, like piquant sort of flavors. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's just a good practice for us to be mindful of the people that we're serving. And I can tell you, it's going to make your food taste better by doing that. Just that act of being mindful and cooking it. So that's kind of what I say, you know, is really give a lot of thought to who you're cooking for and sort of what they appreciate.
Jolene.
You know, I think that's kind of interesting that she thinks that our food is too salty, because I would think that our food would tend more toward a little more blandness than overseasoning.
She makes that argument too, okay. But she would argue though that we should have, you know,
less salt,
more there are different ways to season food than to simply salt, pour the salt
shaker
over.
Well, that is true, but yeah. But you know that you kind of have to remember where our food comes from here in Indiana. Mm-hmm.
That's
you know,
right.
And the fact that we had to preserve it,
right,
exactly
right,
yeah.
Right, and then our food comes from Appalachia, you know, mm-hmm. comes up from the south and comes, you know, over from upper Ohio and that sort of thing. So, you know, we kind of have a down home kind of thing going here in Indiana anyway. And not that there's anything wrong with that. But you do have to, you know, keep in mind other people's tastes and dietary requirements at this, you know, at this time of year. You know, I would venture to say there is probably somebody in just about everyone's family who doesn't eat much meat, if mm-hmm. if any. Perhaps you have vegetarians in your family or vegans, you know, and it is hospitality. I mean, you know, I've had to make those adjustments with various people in my family as well, and it is it makes it nicer if people don't have to worry, you know, that they can enjoy, that there will be something for them to enjoy at the holiday table.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Shannon that's on point. Again, if you want to talk to us by Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. Shannon writes, how do the guests liven up the old, traditional, and often bland side dishes everyone expects? Green beans, potatoes, dressing, Brussels sprouts. I'll start with Jolene on that.
Oh,
well,
you should start with Neil and the Brussels sprouts. You know,
we'll get there. We'll get to the Brussels sprouts okay. eventually. But I've been picking on Neil too much.
Well,
first,
you know,
out of the gate,
you know, there's been a pizza that I like that's had Brussels sprouts on it. So, so there are ways to enliven these things. But you can suggest or ask people nicely, you know, to try a new recipe. Or, you know, if you want to get all bossy and everything, you can assign people things. You know, sometimes people just want to be told what to bring. It's like, would you mm-hmm. please bring this? And they'll say, sure, because that takes the burden off of them of trying to figure out what in the world am I going to take, you know, to this holiday dinner. And if you want them to make a, you know, a sort of more interesting version of sweet potato casserole, they probably will do it for you. You know, it's the holidays. People want to be nice. They want to play along and... You know, take the lead. I mean, if that's what you want to do and if you want to change it up, then give it a try. Change it up.
But what are some ways to do that? I want to give Shannon some help here. So what are some ways? Neil, I'll throw that
well,
to you.
I'm going to incorporate two things that you mentioned specifically because I gave someone the suggestion for Thanksgiving on Facebook. Instead of doing a green bean casserole, I love Brussels sprouts. I think they're one of the healthiest and really the most satisfying things you can eat during the winter months. And so... Do a Brussels sprout casserole, right? Make it the exact same way you would use green beans,
okay.
Except incorporate Brussels sprouts instead of the green beans because, frankly, green beans aren't in season right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you could do things like that. But I think the theme here is that I think people get a little afraid. They don't – look, you're not going to mess up Christmas,
yeah.
you know?
Right.
You're not going to ruin Christmas.
Right. As long as the kids are happy, they've got their presents
exactly.
and they're running around.
As long
yeah.
as you're together,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think you can be adventurous, and I love the idea of assigning things to people because I really identify with sometimes you just want to be told what to do.
Yeah.
You want the choice made for you,
mm-hmm.
and not only that, but you learn something. You know, you learn a new recipe. It broadens your sort of culinary horizons, and boy, there's nothing wrong with that. And you're not going to ruin Christmas.
Well, and it gives again, it gives you a little something else to talk about too at the dinner table. If there might be topics you're avoiding this year, you can talk about the recipes and the food, and you know how did that work out for you? You know.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to. Neil said he had two ideas. He said one was the Brussels sprout casserole. I didn't want to leave Shannon hanging here. So.
Yeah, so the other is a use of those spices, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was inspired by Jolene saying using international flavors. Again, I'm really fascinated by this idea of this tagine, right?
Let's have that dinner.
Yeah, exactly, right? I love Moroccan spices, the anise, the cinnamon, the nutmeg, the clove. Those are things that naturally sort of fall within the parameters of a traditional Christmas meal. You could add those things to so many things and use, you know, do a sweet potato tagine for me. Add a little tomato in there, put it in a cool little pot with a lid that is vented and put it in the oven and bake it and report back. And don't call me bad names.
We are talking about holiday cooking. Here on No Limits. My guests are Chef Neil Brown of Pizzaology and Jolene Ketzenberger of Eat Drink Indie, WFYI Radio, and she has her own blog. If you want to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll. We are talking about holiday cooking here on No Limits today. My guests are Chef Neil Brown of Pizzaology, Jolene Ketzenberger of Eat Drink Indie, here at WFYI Radio, of course, and she has her own blog. We're getting some interesting questions here.
Okay.
This one is from a listener named George via email. And again, if you want to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. He begins by saying, to stuff or not to stuff. Mm. It has been a subject of many long, tedious conversations.
Mm.
How may I stuff a bird without fear of killing those at my table? Many thanks, George. Who wants it first?
Well, I would say that the easy answer to that is not to stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there you go. I think that it's easier to make cook your bird to the appropriate temperatures and to cook your stuffing to the appropriate temperatures as well. If one's not inside the other one, but if you really want to do that, if you want to stuff your bird too, because you know of the flavor and the sort of tradition and how it looks when you pull it all out of the oven and everything, that's great. I would make another pan of the dressing. Then I would call it dressing if it's not in the bird, and then you don't have to like try to scoop the dressing, the stuffing out of the bird to serve it. You can serve your stuffing / dressing out of the pan on the side. So that would be my way around it.
No. All right. Point, counterpoint.
Okay.
All right. This is good.
So I say stuff, and I say don't worry about it. Is there a waiver around here? here's the thing, right? If you buy your bird from a really reputable source, and that is not Butterball, that is a place like Heritage Turkeys online you can find. Gunthorpe Farms is my go-to every single year. If you know where this bird is coming from and you know the conditions under which it's been raised and especially it's been harvested, which is sort of the nice way we say slaughtered these days, you really don't have to worry too much about this. Now, with that being said, there is a way that you can have the sort of the best of both worlds, the certainty and still have the stuffing. So when the bird comes out, as I said, that bird needs to rest for a good 30 minutes or so. You can actually spoon the stuffing out, put it in a really beautiful pan, and then put that stuffing back into the oven while all your other stuff is in the oven and just bring it up to a higher temperature, and you should be absolutely fine.
Okay. What would be that higher temperature that you should...
Oh, you'd like to get the center of it well over... Well... Let's see. That's a good question. It would need to be at least 180 internal temperature to kill anything. But again, if you have a good quality bird or piece of meat from a reputable farm, you really don't have too much to worry about these days. Now, there's always concerns, right?
Yeah.
That's my caveat.
Okay. We have a tweet from a listener named Mel, and again, you can find us on Twitter, at WFYI. Mel writes, we let our guests know that they don't have to try everything. I understand chicken livers wrapped in bacon might not be everyone's fave. How important, and I'll tell you what, Mel, I'm going to translate that into, what are some of the common mistakes or easily avoidable mistakes people make with holiday meals, particularly big holiday meals, that, you know, if you avoid making these, will reduce the stress both for you and for all of your guests? Jolene.
Well, I think part of it is to separate your expectations of the holiday from the meal. Like Neil said earlier, you're not going to ruin Christmas, you know, if someone doesn't like your Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay. You know, and it's okay for people to, you know, I've grown up with one of my kids who really didn't like a lot of the stuff on the holiday table, you know, and so just let go of some of those expectations that everyone's going to have this heaping plate of everything. And just let people enjoy what they want to enjoy, how they want to enjoy it, you know, so that everybody can have their holiday meal the way they want it. And if you want to put mashed potatoes on top of something with gravy and corn on top of that, then you do that. But if someone else likes their food not to touch, then that's okay, too.
sounds like you had children, Jolene.
So, you know, it's okay. So I would say let go of some of the expectations.
Yeah.
Neil.
Yeah, I totally agree with Jolene, by the way. But I would also say from a cooking standpoint, allow things to rest, because I do think that that's something that a lot of people fail to do. These large cuts of meat tend to be what a lot of people cook for the holidays, right?
Yeah.
Let those rest for an appropriate amount of time. And
you say it's at least a minute per pound.
At minimum, a minute per pound. And really optimally, 4 to 5 minutes per pound, which seems like a long time. But, man, you'll really reap the benefits of that rest time.
What does the rest time do?
It allows the internal juices to redistribute throughout the proteins, right? So proteins tend to they tighten up during the cooking process very much. So imagine a sponge where you squeeze a sponge and all that moisture comes pouring out of those pores, right? When you start to release that pressure, some of that moisture allows itself to come back into and redistribute itself throughout that meat. So resting is probably the single most important thing you can do for a large piece of meat. And I see it not happen a lot. So in the home kitchens, the other thing is I think people are just really nervous about timing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest, even on the holidays, it's like I turn into a moron. You know, I get nervous about timing because I'm like, all I have is this one oven. So I can't imagine the cook that cooks, you know, once or twice a year. Mm-hmm. It must be really aggravating. But just remember that things need to rest. And things aren't going to get cold. And if they get cold, you can pop it right back in the oven for, you know, a really short amount of time and it'll reheat it. So you're getting the timing right is probably the next biggest thing. From a strictly cooking standpoint, those would be two big things, I would say.
Okay, this one's personally, purely personal on my part. What are the best, because for me, yes, I like the holiday meal, but it is... because it is big and often stressful, you know, there are a lot of people there and we're often hosting. What I really look forward to are the leftovers.
Oh, absolutely.
After the stress is over. What are some of the best meals to generate high quality and deeply satisfying leftovers for several days after the stress is departed?
Well, okay, so my favorite holiday leftover, and I came home from, we did Thanksgiving away this year, and I came home and made a turkey and all the accompaniments the day after Thanksgiving, just so that we would have leftovers for that weekend, because I have to have a turkey Manhattan. I'm kind of partial to these Manhattan things because it's an Indianapolis dish, if you believe the sort of spurious research that's available out there. But it is it's just a sandwich.
Well, Christmas is all about believing the
mythology. It is. You have to believe the mythology, I'm telling you. You know, it's a sandwich with mashed potatoes and gravy, you know, and that's a very satisfying kind of leftover thing to have.
Neil.
I don't know. You always kind of think back to Thanksgiving, right? When you think about holiday leftovers. Don't forget that if you're doing a roast of some sort, that meat makes a great breakfast the next day.
Mm.
Steak and eggs doesn't have to mean steak and eggs, right? It can mean any really great piece of roasted meat and some eggs and some toast, and it's going to be pretty amazing. So you can use that at breakfast, lunch. I'm not sure there's anything better than a leftover turkey sandwich with stuffing on it. And you throw some mashed potatoes on there.
Is there cranberry sauce? And man, that's a sandwich, isn't it?
It's incredible how those things can all come together and make this, like, wonderful sandwich, right? So, I think it's a place where you can get creative. Stir fries, obviously, with, mm-hmm. with this meat are excellent. It's
and
a great
soups.
Way to utilize. Yeah, and soups, of course. Yeah. Yeah. We went hunting, a bunch of chefs and I went hunting the day after Thanksgiving, and we all literally brought like soups with like leftovers and stuff. So that was something we all utilized that sort of that technique.
We have gotten a question via Facebook from our regular listener, Gary. Our Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Gary writes, question about what can or should the single childless adult do for the parents if the parents are doing the cooking? Well, presumably say thank you, but otherwise beyond that, yeah, Jolene.
So you have the kid coming home for the holiday? Is that the situation?
Yeah, well, it sounds like it's an adult child.
Right.
Who's
coming home
back.
For the holidays.
That's easy. Dishes.
Yeah. Dishes.
Nothing says thank you like doing dishes.
That's right. You know, I would say as somebody whose kids are, you know, come home from college and that sort of thing, is, you know, you don't have to do anything, really. You just kind of hang out and be with mom
dishes.
And dad. You know, because that's because I think that they're going to want to hang out with you. So don't, I guess the thing is, come in and be a part of things, you know, and do, offer to pitch in, you know.
And do the dishes.
And do the dishes, you know, whatever anybody wants you to do, I suppose would be the question. If you're coming home to see mom and dad and to make the folks happy, then, you know, then do that. Give your of yourself and do whatever it is they want you to do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, bring a not expensive, nice bottle of wine.
Mm-hmm. A dessert.
A dessert certainly is something that, you know, even if you, it's always going to be better if you make it, even if it doesn't taste better. It's the you know, it's the thought, right? And
it, is,
and it goes a long
true.
Way during the holidays. So, yeah, there are lots of ways you can help out.
We have a practical question from a listener named Jack via Facebook. And our Facebook, again, is No Limits WFYI. Jack writes, with many diabetics in the family, I am making my first cheesecake, was considering replacing the minimal sugar with a replacement like Splenda or Truvia. Any thoughts?
I'm not a dietitian, Jack. I'm sorry. I'm not going to be much of a help here. I don't know the answer to that question. I'm sorry.
I would suggest that you find a good trusted source online. You know, mm-hmm. that you like there, and there's lots and lots of cooking websites and resources, some specifically focused on that sort of cooking. Cooking Light, for example, has some really terrific recipes. So I would find a trusted source and then follow that recipe very closely. If you're cooking for someone with particular dietary requirements, it's not the time for improvisation, you know, to throw in this and that. I would stick, get a good recipe and stick to
and
it.
And that is a more common. I'm diabetic, and my wife makes for the holidays always a pumpkin pie that is sugar free, mm-hmm. that is just absolutely phenomenal. That's one of the leftovers that I adore.
I would imagine
it's not only dessert, it's breakfast
right.
the
it's
next
breakfast.
Morning.
Pie is breakfast. That's
so,
what I
so,
think.
So, Jack, I would say that that's a great point, because pumpkin probably has enough natural sugar in it that you could incorporate that into your cheesecake recipe, and it would probably be an adequate amount of sugar to provide sort of that sweetness.
Yeah. And then we've got another listener via Facebook who wants to take it into another direction that we haven't covered yet. Says, any suggestions for good holiday cocktails?
Oh, for heaven's sakes, Neil, tell us.
go,
yes,
Neil,
whiskey.
Go.
Yeah,
it's like
so,
Mark Twain.
Yeah.
Avoid excess, but too much whiskey is just enough.
That's exactly right, yeah. So pour whiskey in a glass and put a small ice cube in there, and they're good. Man, I'll tell you, I'm really into Manhattans right now. Mm. It's really sort of my thing. And, of course, old fashions are the quintessential, seems to be a quintessential American cocktail. Everywhere you go, someone's got their sort of version of an old fashioned. So old fashions, Manhattans, of course, that's bourbon. I'm trying to think. Eggnog, of course, with the addition of I'm working on a recipe right now for a Japanese whiskey eggnog, which is really cool. It's it's kind of smoky. I'm trying to get that, trying to sort of work through the balance of that. But it's going to work out well. Boy, I'm trying to think of like things that are kind of rich. Punches, of course. Are fantastic for this time of year because they conserve a lot of people. Be careful with punches. Mm. Put the appropriate amount of punch glasses out, so one punch glass per person, so you can sort of keep an eye on people, because you can overdo it with punch. But yeah, so I love Manhattans. I love old fashions, and for the holidays, they sure do warm you up.
Jolene.
Oh, I think sparkling wine, I think it's hard to go wrong with that. It's not exactly a cocktail, mm-hmm. but you can add a little something to a sparkling wine, Prosecco, Cava, champagne, that kind of thing, and make it festive and fun. And, it seems very holiday-ish.
What about picking up on Gary's earlier question about, one of the suggestions also was, I think, was bringing wine. What would be a good wine to bring with a holiday meal that's a safe one? I'll go with Neil first on that.
Yeah, Pinot Noir tends to be a very food friendly wine. It's if you're going to be cooking poultry, it will go with poultry. It can go with maybe more assertive flavors of fish, and by that I mean salmon, fattier fish. Mm-hmm. And of course, with red meat or pork, it does well. So, I think if I had to pick one varietal that I was going to sort of recommend, it would be a Pinot Noir.
Pinot Noir,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jolene,
I'd just go with a sparkling wine again. I think champagne goes with everything.
So it does.
Wasn't it Winston Churchill who actually started his day? For him, champagne was a breakfast.
Well, there's
drink.
Nothing wrong with a mimosa at breakfast either.
That's right.
So we're getting close on time here. What is a great way to sort of jumpstart a holiday tradition to make do something that gets people looking forward to the next holiday season? The equivalent of those cookies or whatever that Jolene was talking about. Jolene, I'll start with you.
I think just doing something a little silly and unexpected, can kind of make it fun and give you something to remember back next year. You can say, oh, well, okay, I made everybody come to the table wearing a silly hat, and so somebody ran into the living room and got to stand a hat, and somebody, put, I don't know where we came up with a sombrero, but someone was wearing a sombrero. I don't know. Okay. It was just something silly. It was something silly and fun and goofy, and those kinds of things make for good stories later.
Neil.
Well, traditions are about consistency, right? So I think just find what works for your family. If you're a family of really busy people, maybe a pitch-in is your family tradition, right? If you want to get really traditional, then maybe the really formal sort of roasting a ham with all the trimmings is your tradition. I think it's really about finding what works for the new family these days, because it's a new world we live in. And so just finding what works for you and creating that tradition.
And there really isn't anything wrong with carry out either. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be fancy. It just has to be special for your family.
Mm-hmm. And I think that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank both of my guests, Neil Brown of Pizzaology and Jolene Ketzenberger of Eat Drink Indy, WFYI, and her own blog, for making me very, very hungry during this past hour. I'd like to thank our listeners and wish them a happy holiday. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cerzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.